One, if you could find a seat, and we will be ready to start our City Council meeting of February 13th. Let's begin with a call to order, and we will begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilwoman Moreno.
Please join me in a pledge to our flag.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Well, we'll see how well I do using the stationary mic. Usually I have a mic on my head because I move so much it kind of comes and goes. But we'll give it a try because I'm having a little trouble with the wires. We'll begin with a roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbo.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First item is approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Burbo, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
It's all right.
I think that was Councilmember Sturdivant.
That's okay.
Oh, okay.
Does it matter?
Well, I heard.
I can only hear
out of my left ear, so I never.
That's
hear.
Okay.
That's fine. If we'll go with that.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Burbo.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. No presentations, so first item is the consent calendar. Is there any member of the council or public wishing to pull an item for further discussion? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Roll call.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next, we have updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. Ooh, this is extra loud. The first item I want to tell you a little bit about tonight is the George C. Beatty A-Town Skate Park Pro Scooter Contest that occurred a little earlier this year in January. So the West Coast Winter Series Pro Scooter Contest is a four contest series held over the course of 4 months with two contests in Bakersfield and two contests, including the championship event being held here in Atascadero at Atom Park. Athletes came from all over the western United States and even a couple from the East Coast to attend the contest series. The final event was spread throughout the entire week with training sessions, private lessons, and high-volume attendance all week long. Over 75 qualifiers attended the final championship event, which helped to draw numerous visitors to our local hotels and restaurants throughout the week. Top pro athletes served as contest judges, and Chris Ferris emceed the event. Chris is a lifetime Atascadero resident and considered to be one of the top pro athletes riding pro scooters in the world. Some notable winners include 10-year-old Atascadero local Claire Parks, who won the girls division, Ben Garcia and Josh Juarez, both of Paso Robles, also did very well winning their divisions. A-Town Park is a destination for the fast-growing sport of scooters for athletes from around the world and is open 7 days a week, offering a free after-school program, internships, mentoring, and is staffed at all times. So it was a wonderful series. I know that a lot of the athletes really enjoyed being here in Atascadero, and we certainly enjoyed having them. So great event. Speaking of great events, we had our Sweetheart Stroll last Saturday. Nearly 150 people attended this year's Sweetheart Stroll, co-sponsored by the City of Atascadero and the Chamber of Commerce. It was a beautiful day for a downtown stroll and a little wine tasting. The event included performances by Fairweather 4 Barbershop Quartet and Ricky Montillo at Grape Encounters. We had wine tasting at 10 locations, plus beer tasting at Dead Oak Brewery. And we had carriage rides in a Queen Elizabeth replica carriage provided by Walter Ventures. So it was absolutely stunning day. I was able to enjoy a little bit of it after our strategic planning session, and it was good to see people out and about and enjoying themselves in our beautiful downtown. We once again received the Excellence in Budgeting Award. So we've been honored again this year with our Excellence in Budgeting Award from the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers, fondly known as CSMFO, for the city's 2017-2019 operating budget. The city is eligible to submit for this award every 2 years, and we've successfully received the Excellence in Budgeting Award each time since our 2003-2005 budget submittal. The CSMFO Budget Awards Program is designed to recognize agencies whose budget documents meet certain statewide standards and requirements and are considered to be of the highest quality. The award represents significant accomplishments by government and its leadership in meeting high standards. And we want to thank Jerry, her team, and really all of the staff that work very hard at preparing the budget, making sure that a lot of thought and energy go into it, and preparing the budget document. So thank you, Jerry. Want to talk a little bit about Santa Maria Brewing. It's starting to look a little bit like a brewery and distillery inside, so we're pretty excited. The project is moving along well. There had been a slight delay in progress with a change in general contractor, but it's back on track. All underfloor plumbing and electrical have been completed and signed off, and they're currently putting in the new exterior grease trap and working on interior wall framing. You can see a lot of the equipment is already in and in place, and we are very excited for this project to open to the public here in Atascadero soon. It's going to include a brewery, a distillery, a restaurant, and they'll be doing a lot of their canning and other things here. And the other one I get a lot of questions about is the Creekside Building, and where are we on the Creekside Building? The Creekside Building is in escrow and being sold to Colony Creekside LLC, and we hope to close escrow sometime within the next 30 days, give or take. We are currently working on splitting out the Transit Center as a separate parcel, and we're not going to be transferring that ownership of that, and the plaza areas. So that's taking a little bit of time, but we're getting through that. Colony Creekside LLC is already working on leasing the building and has had a lot of interest in the building. In fact, they have several very interested parties, and they are doing some their programming, design. They're in the design phase for various programming for potential tenants. So we look forward to having the building occupied and the tenants a part of our downtown in the next few months. It's moving very quickly, and we're excited to see it be occupied and have more people here in the downtown. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions council may have.
Council questions. Seeing none, we'll move on, but we do want to thank Ms. Rangel and your team for another excellent job on working on the budget. I know it's a lot of work. Next is the community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on anything that's not on the agenda. And tonight, that's darn near anything, because we have a fairly short agenda focused on one item primarily. It does need to be under our jurisdiction, but we'd welcome you to come forward now and speak if you'd like to. Seeing no one jogging towards the lectern, we'll go ahead and close public forum unless anyone walking in now wishes to speak. Seeing none, we'll close the community forum. Move on to our first public hearing, which is the Title IX Planning and Zoning Text Amendments, Downtown Office and Residential. I'm going to go ahead and read the recommendation because I think it was pretty clear. It touches on the main components of this, and then we'll hear from our community development director. But the recommendation for the council is to introduce for first reading by title only the draft ordinance amending the Atascadero Municipal Code Title IX Zoning Ordinance Section 9-3.330 requiring conditional use permit for office uses on the ground floor and prohibiting a ground floor
residential use within the downtown zoning district. Section 9-3.347 removes a 20-foot setback requirement from West Mall, and Section 9-7.110 allows an office use to be reestablished following involuntary destruction. So if that was too technical for anyone, we're going to hear the more technical and the simpler versions of this from Mr. Phil Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. And I'm going to try and boil this down to be as less technical as possible. But what I'd like to really get into is what the Planning Commission made a recommendation of on January 16th of this year. And that's three topics for our downtown. And that's the ground floor land uses, such as office and healthcare, ground floor land uses, such as residential, and the building setback issue on West Mall. I'll go through each of those topics and describe some background, specifically where our general plan asks us to go in these areas and how we've looked at these things in the past. So just to give an overview of the area we're talking about, we have a zoning district in the city that's called the Downtown Commercial Zoning District. And on that map on the screen, that's the big area outlined in black. Well, it's mostly black. You see a couple other colors in there. Now, what we're talking about tonight really is focusing in on a couple little spot areas. The one at the top of the screen is an area that we're looking at to eliminate the ground floor residential, which is sort of an exception that's built into the code right now that allows for the properties such as the Printery property and the Armory property to have residential uses on the ground floor. The other big portion we're looking at tonight is sort of the real core of our downtown, and that's the area that our general plan policies speak to that want that lively restaurant and retail environment. And that's East Mall, West Mall, and Trotta Traffic Way and portions of El Camino Real. And that's the big topic of tonight, discussing those office uses and how they should be categorized within the zoning. The third item, a much smaller item, is really just a cleanup item. And that's a setback discrepancy that's shown in our zoning code that calls for a 20-foot setback off of the right-of-way at West Mall, whereas there's already a 20-foot right-of-way in that location. So that would essentially entail a 40-foot setback off that street right-of-way, which would essentially eliminate any development on that street. So it's an anomaly that we wanted to clean up. And I'll get into some more detail about those in just a moment. But what I want to do is really build the foundation for what we're doing tonight, what we're looking at tonight. And it really comes out of our general plan. And there's a couple of policies there that really speak to these issues in creating the downtown that really encourages pedestrian orientation, encourages businesses that have these small lots with sidewalk storefronts, even mixed use residential on the upper floors. And then also it really gave this implementation tool, which was the Downtown Revitalization Plan. And that was a written plan and a graphical plan. And in that, it was really an idea to develop a master plan for Sunken Gardens and the surrounding blocks to really establish that area as a vibrant dining, community gathering area, and really a civic destination. It's the core of our community. And then the Downtown Revitalization Plan went on to say that the real desired use in that area is the multi-story mixed uses, retail commercial uses on the ground floor with residential office and visitor accommodations above that. So tonight we're really focusing on what should those ground floor uses be, what should the zoning really cater to, what should it incentivize. So along with those policies came along this graphic plan. And this graphic plan really laid out a concept for the parking areas, the primary land uses, and how the area should develop. What's exciting right now is several of the things in this plan, in fact, many of the things in this plan are already moving along, such as the bridge, Colony Square, the proposal we have on the table right now for La Plaza, and some of the other components in here. And I'll go through a list of those things. So that was adopted in 2000, and it was really aimed at getting the economic vitality back into the downtown. At that time, our downtown was pretty quiet. A lot of things hadn't moved forward. The Carlton was vacant, had a lot of vacancies throughout downtown, a lot of different things happening than we have today. But that plan also made a suggestion that the city should incentivize the transition of downtown medical offices. It also wanted to support business and jobs in the downtown, and office uses do have a place in the downtown. So where are we today? Right now, this list on the screen really tells us a lot of the successes that have happened very recently, and it's a very exciting time. As I mentioned, a pedestrian bridge is done. We've got the new development proposal for Colony Square. As Rochelle was mentioning in the update tonight, the Creekside building is going through a sale. The La Plaza mixed-use development is moving through the process, and that's looking really good. We'll be looking at some traffic studies for El Camino Real, both in the downtown and outside of the downtown, to look at how we can get better pedestrian connectivity and traffic calming in those areas. And, of course, we have the farmers market back in downtown. The restoration of this building was also a big turning point several years ago, and it's been such a key piece of building all of those things together. Top of that, we're seeing new coffee shops, we're seeing new microbreweries, we're seeing new restaurants, and we get inquiries for those things all the time. It's really a different time than it was some years ago when the general plan was first adopted and we looked at our land use structure downtown. Just a couple of quick snapshots of some of the projects that we're looking at right now, such as La Plaza, such as Colony Square by the Galaxy Theater. Here's a nice shot of the bridge being installed. Such a wonderful project for our downtown. So what was the goal? We really wanted to incentivize a certain set of uses downtown. That's what the general plan called for. It also said, hey, we should allow other uses where appropriate. The healthcare services, the offices, the support services, the government offices, facilities, and even the residential. But right now, today, the way our zoning is written, it incentivizes all of these uses because it doesn't require parking for these uses, it doesn't require discretionary review, and it makes it easy to put in an office on the ground floor. And that's part of the reason why the area around Sunken Gardens Park, which is a really attractive area to have a business, has become, it's evolved into, essentially, a medical office plaza, which appears to be inconsistent with where our general plan really wanted us to go. It appears inconsistent with where our community really wanted us to go. So this is that list of uses that we currently allow throughout our downtown. It talks about offices. It talks about healthcare services as a separate category. And then there's a series of other land uses that we also allow in the downtown, the restaurants, the business support services, even the personal services, and the retail and the entertainment uses. So for all of those land uses, we put in what we like to call an incentive. We don't require discretionary review. We don't require any parking. We essentially have a streamlined permit review, and we even have very flexible development standards, and we really try and promote business. We're a business-friendly community, and we really want our town to be successful. Tonight, what the Planning Commission has recommended we consider is shifting a few of those uses into the conditional use permit category. So essentially removing that incentive to locate a ground floor office around the park, on the ground floor at Entrada, on the ground floor on portions of Traffic Way and portions of El Camino Real within that core downtown area. What that would do would mean if an office came in today for one of those ground floor locations in a new location, they would be required to apply for a Planning Commission use permit. The Planning Commission would need to make a set of specific findings, and I'll go through those findings. They could apply specific conditions to that particular project, and they could have the discretion to deny or conditionally approve based on meeting that set of findings. The very specific area we're looking at for this, if we look at this map of the downtown, is this area that I've outlined on the map. Again, it's East Mall and West Mall, essentially between El Camino Real and Palma, both sides of Palma, Entrada to Palma, again, both sides of Palma, and Traffic Way to almost the limit of where you run into Lewis Avenue. And then on El Camino Real, north of Atascadero Creek, and all the way up to the police station. That essentially is our core retail area. Areas outside of that really have a different feel, a different walkability, and are a different location. Already in Colony Square, there are limitations in terms of land use varieties there, and it's sort of a specific plan, so that is outside of this particular proposal. Now, I mentioned there's a set of findings that would need to be made through this use permit process. These are those five findings, really designed so that if there is a new office that comes in, we need to ensure it's really the best land use for that ground floor location, that it's not ideal for pedestrian uses such as restaurants, retail, or related uses, that maybe it's in an existing building that really isn't conducive for another use, and that that office will be a significant contribution to economic development, and that they supply the parking, the accessibility, and the property development standards that will meet our code. And lastly, that it will provide a storefront and other architectural features that really complement the pedestrian scale and retail environment desired within our downtown. What does that mean? It's actually a good example of that kind of architecture right now being built for the new medical office building that's on West Mall, near the corner of West Mall and Palma, that's almost finished today. That has that sort of architectural feel to it that finding number five speaks to. So what happens to existing ground floor offices? Well, just about nothing. They can remain indefinitely under our current non-conforming policy. Now, if they decided to leave and that space was vacant for more than 6 months, a new business must come in and conform to the standards. In other words, they would have to apply for a use permit. If a hurricane dropped down and destroyed that building must conform, including the land use that's within it. In other words, they would have to come back for a use permit. Now, the Planning Commission saw that, staff saw that, and I think wanted to address some concerns, so they did propose they soften that language a little bit and say, okay, well, if it's in an office and they really want to come back because they got destroyed by an earthquake or some other disaster and their building really got destroyed more than 75%, let them rebuild if they want the same exact office in the same exact location to the same footprint without having to get that use permit. So that was one of the items that the Planning Commission suggested we add into the code. Well, the second topic I'd like to touch on tonight is the ground floor residential uses. It's sort of an odd little anomaly that was written into our code for our downtown commercial zone. And again, commercial property, flat commercial property in the downtown is incredibly valuable. We have an incredible shortage in the city of Atascadero of flat commercial land, especially in our downtown core. Our general plan sees that, our community sees that. So to give up that space for residential would be a loss to that economic development potential. So the suggestion here from the Planning Commission is to remove that option from the code. Above ground floor residential would still be allowed with this amendment, just like anywhere else in the downtown for a mixed-use project. The third topic tonight, again, is what I mentioned earlier, is the 20-foot setback along West Mall. It was designed to maintain the parkway. There's the same setback requirement on East Mall. However, it was discovered some time ago that the right-of-way is actually much larger on West Mall and extends at least 20 feet beyond the back of sidewalk. So essentially, the purpose of that setback has already been served without having an additional setback requirement. In fact, we had in community development some years ago already adopted a policy that spoke to this issue so that when development came in, it would ignore that setback. Now it's time to actually codify that. Here's a graphic that tries to illustrate that. That little red line there shows what the width of that right-of-way is built in. You can see on that map, the red area there you see is sort of the private property boundary. The areas that have the color where you can see through there to the street are the widths of the right-of-ways. And you can see on that West Mall, which is on the other side of the park there, how much wider that right-of-way already is. So that 20-foot setback's already built into that. So in conclusion, there's three proposed amendments to downtown zoning: the ground floor office uses, the ground floor residential uses, and the West Mall setback. The Planning Commission did have substantial discussion on this item. Some of the commissioners felt, is this enough to make a difference for our downtown, to implement our general plan and implement what we've heard from our community for many years? Others felt, we can continue to look at this over the years, and maybe this is a step in the right direction now, and we can continue to evaluate options as time goes on. And that this is probably a good, satisfactory compromise that addresses concerns of those who have offices on the ground floor now, while still addressing the needs for our general plan and moving forward. So with that, I'm going to leave this item on the screen, but I'm also going to bring up just some clarifications to the ordinance. Once we did send you the draft of the ordinance, we did find that we did need to make some clarifications. The language was a little bit confusing. We wanted to make sure it's very clear as to where the use permit takes effect. So we did change the wording a little bit to clarify, as you see it on the screen, and we also will be adding an exhibit to this that really shows on a map exactly where this would be implemented. And I believe Laura had passed out those amendments to you tonight along with that exhibit. On the screen you see here is that the blue colors are the items that we actually have added to the latest draft, clarifying those locations. And the purple is items that we've taken out, clarifying that particular code. Additionally, we did have one more item in here that needed to be clarified. There was some language added in here for a side setback. After doing some further analysis this afternoon, I found out that we had actually discussed putting this in here to accommodate the Century 21 office building, because it actually has double frontage on both East Mall and on El Camino Real, but then later realized that that amendment's really not necessary, so staff is recommending leaving that out altogether. So that is that clarification on the side setback of 20 feet. And lastly, a clarification on the non-conforming portion to make that read better. And the intent there, again, by the Planning Commission, was to allow reconstruction of an office building should it be destroyed by more than 75%, providing that the floor area and business all remain unchanged during that process. In essence, we know that it would take 6 months, more than 6 months, to rebuild that office, and given a natural disaster, I think they wanted to offer that assurance to that. I'm going to end the presentation there, and then again, we do have alternatives to look at this several different ways, and what I'm giving you tonight is a recommendation of the Planning Commission. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thorough report. And I think most everyone here tonight has been through a council meeting where we've had a public hearing, but just in case, we will first go through what's called ex parte, which is where any of the council members disclose to you any conversations we've had about this project outside of this public process, because you have a right to know anything that's influenced our thinking or decisions on a project before us. Next, we're going to go and have council members ask any questions of staff just about the report or any questions about this project. We don't get into deliberation, coming to any conclusions before we get a chance to hear from you. After we've exhausted all council questions, we'll open it up to the public. You can ask anything you want on this topic, and then we won't respond as each person gives their questions, but when we conclude the public comment, we'll bring it back to staff and have staff try to address any questions raised at that time, and then the council will start deliberating. We'll kind of consider what we've heard and we'll work towards a resolution at that time. So we'll begin first with ex parte communications, and I'll just begin going from my left to my right if there's anything to disclose.
Quite a while ago, may not be relevant, I had a discussion with Dr. Linscott, dentist on a thing, and I recently had a discussion with Mike Zappas, the proponent of the La Plaza project, and this subject was touched on.
I also, now that I think about it, I spoke with Mr. Zappas, and it was touched on, but nothing of substance talked about. I've spoken with two business owners on Traffic Way, and prior to the Planning Commission, one of the dentists had approached me with a question, but it didn't go beyond that.
Thank you. Well, I've had discussions over the years, but nothing really in the last year or two that I can recollect. This has been considered before, so nothing new to report.
Thank you. I did also talk with Mr. Zappas and several business owners in the downtown area.
I have had no discussions with anyone on this issue, and just other than what's in the staff report.
Thank you. Now, any council questions before we go to the public? Go right ahead.
I have a question for you, Phil, regarding the findings that are in here. So if a business wanted to come in and build an office, they now would have to have parking, and before they did not. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And in terms of item number two for the findings, it says the existing building and site improvements are designed exclusively for office uses and could not accommodate other uses. Sometimes buildings are built in such a way that you can put in retail if you were to take out the front counter or reconfigure modularly. How are you going to determine this is what I'm trying to get at.
Most buildings really can accommodate a change in use. So that finding by itself doesn't contain a lot of power. But when taken collectively with the rest, like it's intended to be, then it really speaks to something. So I think what you have is a really good question there. That is, by itself, doesn't have a lot of strength. And to really say that a building couldn't be modified is neither here nor there, because any building really could be modified, but some are in such a location and their site improvements are done so much so that maybe it's more intensive than another building to be modified to that stuff.
Okay, that makes sense. And just, I want to clarify, if there's a natural disaster and Dr. Linscott's office is 50% destroyed but not 75%, what would happen?
Well, whether it's under this proposal right now, whether it's 50% or 90%, there would be no impact to that at all. It could continue. Now, without that particular caveat being inserted into the code for the adjustment to the nonconforming policy, our nonconforming policy today says that if it's less than 75% destroyed, it can be rebuilt as it is, regardless of the nonconforming land use. It's if it's more than 75% destroyed, that building has to be made to conform, including the land use.
So what you're saying is that the building would be completely removed, demolished, and rebuilt if it's over 75%, and it would still be allowable?
Under the Planning Commission's proposal, yes. That is not consistent with our existing nonconforming structures policy. Just keep that in mind. But that would be the proposed amendment to that policy.
It would have to have the same footprint. It couldn't be larger or different
in any
way?
That's the way it's written tonight, is that it has to be in the same footprint, same size, same business, same owner, for the same purpose.
Thank you.
Next is Councilmember Sturdivant.
Thank you, Mayor. Phil, could you give me a clarification on the non-conforming portion of this when we're talking about the building? Are they non-conforming now? This does not. They are non-conforming now, correct?
Offices in the ground floor are not non-conforming today.
Okay.
After, if this ordinance does pass this evening, and if it does go through second reading, those uses, would they be non-conforming? Well, I think things that don't have a use permit are sort of considered non-conforming. But if they were to expand or do something that triggered the use permit requirement, they then would become conforming by being given that discretionary approval of the use permit.
Okay, but
so it's a different nonconformity than being a prohibited use, such as a mechanic or a gas station in the downtown, which is not allowed whatsoever with or without a use permit.
Okay, and so my understanding is then, as the uses that are there now, with this, what we're proposing tonight, what we're looking at, there will be no change in the businesses being there in those locations. There will be no change if there's a disaster, they can rebuild. There's no increase to their parking. There's no impact to the businesses existing today. This is for future businesses.
This is really would only apply to someone that decides to move into the downtown from another location, to an existing building or to build a new building. So, or if one of the doctors or dentists or other offices decides to move out and that land use becomes something else for 6 months or more, or where it's vacant for 6 months or more, then that use permit requirement would be triggered if someone else wanted to move in after that 6 months.
Very good.
So that's how the proposal is written tonight.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Councilmember Burbeau, followed by Councilman Moreno.
All right, thank you, Mayor. Mr. Dunsmore, just so I understand, to follow on the question that Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie asked regarding the 75% destruction, if I understand this correctly, what we're really saying is if it's less than 75% destroyed, you always could rebuild it. But that if it was more than 75% destroyed under the current existing thing, you would not have been allowed to rebuild it as an office?
And you would have to get. You would simply have to come in and get a planning commission use permit to rebuild it.
Okay.
So you could.
But you would have had to get a conditional use permit.
So what the planning commission wanted to do was, hey, let's make it
clarify
easier and clarify that.
We're not going to kick you while you're down. Okay.
Yeah, we're not going to. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay. And then I'm just curious on the map, and if you maybe go to the one you have online, I'm looking at the handout, which is looks a little different, but if you could go with the overhead, I don't want to make your job more complicated, but I was curious, particularly along Traffic Way here in the upper, where are we at, Traffic Way, the upper left corner, there's a vacant lot, and I'm wondering why that was not included in this. Because that lot has actually been an issue of contention once before when some years ago when a project was considered for it and there was considerable debate, if I recall, as to what was appropriate use for that piece. I'm
aware exactly of that property. And it just so happens that particular property is significantly sloped, is very difficult to develop, too narrow, too deep to really support a retail or other type of use. So it is probably only conducive for really an office or residential mixed-use type of project, and that was the thought on that, even though we actually just received a proposal this week on that particular property for a mixed-use project that actually includes a storefront retail and upstairs residential.
So. All right, thank you. And then also along those same lines, the properties that front Lewis Avenue that are mostly residential at this point, across from the Fine Arts, the lower part of the Fine Arts Academy. Those are also excluded on your map.
Yes.
And I just wanted to understand the rationale for excluding them from this proposal.
Again, the rationale there is that particular area is already established as sort of an office district or a residential district. Its economic vitality in terms of being conducive to a retail or restaurant development is probably less than that of the other areas.
Okay. And then how did we, and I realize it's been in the code before, so it's probably just carry on, but how did we establish 6 months as the reasonable time frame upon which, let's say, one of the medical providers around here retires, quits their practice, and maybe they own the building, maybe they don't, and you know, we're establishing essentially 6 months for them to identify a replacement tenant of the same type, after which they would, you know, this building would need to become a non, you know, something other than a medical office. I don't have any, you know, opinion about it strongly one way or the other. I'm just wondering how we arrive at 6 months as being the appropriate and reasonable time frame.
I don't know. That 6 months has been in the code for many, many, many years. And, in fact, every community I've looked at their code, they use a six-month provision in their non-conforming regulations. It seems to be the industry standard.
Okay, because I guess, I mean, if you get down to it, that's where the impact is on the property owners, is if mm-hmm. if I quit my practice or my business or my tenant does, I've got to find a I'm going to either have to find the kind of use the city would like to see, or I've got 6 months to find a repeat of the same thing.
Yeah, and the Planning Commission asked the same question, funny enough, and they struggled with that. And the reality is we have the ability to change that to either a shorter or a longer time period. So you can go either way with that. There's nothing in state law or anything else that really fixes that six-month period for nonconformity.
And in the to make sure I understand it all correctly, in the agenda, page 33, which is just happens to be like the front page of the handout you gave us where you put the changes conveniently in red for us, essentially somebody in that condition would have to, if they say, well, I want to get a conditional use permit for a ground floor office use in this particular area, I have to meet all of these findings.
All.
Okay, right. And number one, the location setting of the existing building is not ideal for pedestrian usage. I don't know, it just seems when we use ideal, that's always, I mean, it's a subjective thing, but it's also on the far end of something where...
There are locations that aren't ideal because they're behind other buildings, they're not on the street frontage, and they're hidden away or their design just doesn't facilitate that kind of a use, and I can think of several right now. Okay. That's the reasoning for that particular finding.
Got it. Okay, thank you. I might have some more, Mayor, after we hear public comment.
Thank you. Councilwoman Moreno.
Yeah, Director, back to the destruction of a building that is a non-conforming use. We're saying specifically for offices. Are there any other uses in the downtown that are non-conforming that if they were to be destroyed would then fall back under the zoning? Like, are we, what I'm asking is, are we being unfair to other uses and singling out the medical offices and saying, if it happens to you, you can rebuild, but, you know, you over here, you cannot?
The Planning Commission proposed amendment solely favors offices. Where there are other non-conforming uses in the downtown, there are a couple of, I'll call them storage uses or shipping and receiving warehouse we have in the downtown. We also have a muffler shop. We have two auto mechanics, and we have a service station. All of those are non-conforming uses that are prohibited by zoning today, and they would not receive this same sort of exception based on our existing non-conforming ordinance.
So if they
were destroyed, they would have to be gone.
So what was the Planning Commission's rationale in giving a favored treatment, if you will, to Dr. Stennis's office compared to all the other non-conforming uses that you mentioned?
Trying to find a good middle ground and compromise because of the fact there is very long-term offices that they felt did have some contribution to the local economy and bringing people downtown, and they weren't uses that were detrimental to the health and welfare of the community. In essence, that was the case. But again, I think a couple of the commissioners really wanted to see a faster transition in our downtown, so I think it was a bit of a debate. They were looking at both options. You know, should we be more restrictive, less restrictive? How should we start with this? How should we move forward with this? And I think in the end, I thought, you know, this is a good step now, and maybe in a year or two, as we see things progress, we can come back and revisit that. But again, the council, I think, our recommendation is to take a look at that. You've got alternatives. You can alter that particular factor if you wish.
Thank you.
And I'm looking to the lights I have before me that lets me know if any council member has questions, and I don't see anyone else having a question. I have maybe one for you, Phil. It's hard to tell from looking at the maps, but could you at least describe what the setback is around all of the properties in this area? Because there's a front setback, a back setback. I don't know if there's any side setbacks. There's a creek reservation that's an additional setback that is owned by the city, for example, between the creek and building. And there's really some non-conforming use of some buildings that are actually built over their property lines into city easement. Could you just describe all of those and then how any of this would change with what we're talking about?
Sure, I'll try and do that a little bit. I'll start by this map right here, because this map's good at showing where the public right-of-way is and where private property is. Everything you see in red there is roughly the private property boundary. Everything you see outside of that red is roughly the public property or public easements over private property. So this is a good indication of that. Now, in the downtown, our code says you really should have a zero setback, and so it wants buildings to be built right up to the back of sidewalk to have that downtown feel and that storefront approach and that real pedestrian connection. Along East Mall, West Mall, it was a little bit different. Our code said 20-foot setback on each side to provide for this parkway, for two reasons: to preserve the large coast live oaks that are there, and to produce sort of a, in the future, a patio dining area for restaurants. They could actually ask for encroachment permits, such as the Sylvester's restaurant does, and encroach it within that area. Other setbacks, there are some setbacks for the side property lines, but those really are for areas outside of the downtown. So there really isn't a prescribed setback other than the 20-foot. So is there, does that help answer your question?
Well, looking at East Mall and West Mall, is there a 20-foot front setback and a 10-foot back of the property setback, the farthest away from a street, or how are those setbacks configured currently? And what's the proposed 20-foot setback is from the basically from the street.
Correct.
Sidewalk towards the property.
That's
and
correct.
And that applies to East Mall and West Mall.
And I'm not aware of any other setbacks that are in the code for East Mall in the downtown. And there's nothing proposed to be changed in the setbacks tonight for East Mall other than the West Mall location.
So there was only the setback required on East Mall and West Mall, or only West Mall, and that's proposed to be removed?
Right now, in the code, it's East Mall and West Mall. We're proposing to leave the East Mall 20-foot setback in the code, take out the West Mall 20-foot setback because it's already been considered for in the public right-of-way location, if that makes sense.
Okay, so you're just removing the setback on West Mall, and that would be, for example, where Sylvester's is.
Correct.
And there's a street-side dining, so to speak.
Correct. And this setback only applies to actual buildings and structures. It doesn't apply to someone wanting to do flat work and patio work and other things that can encroach into that setback. The idea is the structure is setback, but then there's a use area still out in that setback area, that yard, we'll call it.
So you could do something like Sylvester's has done.
Correct.
Essentially.
Patio and decking.
Now, on the side of West Mall towards the creek, there is, of course, a pathway put in along on the city property. I think that's within the creek setback area, which is out of sight of the property. And I think there's some cases where there's actually buildings built over the property line, actually extending into the easement that is actually the creek setback. And would that apply to those buildings as well? If, let's say, they were damaged, would they be allowed to rebuild where they're actually over the property line?
That's a different nonconformity. So that would have to be corrected. So that would only apply in this particular circumstance to the land use, assuming that they had a conforming building footprint. And I think the case you're referencing now would reference a nonconforming building footprint because it crosses over other easements or rights of way or property lines. So that would have to be corrected in that particular circumstance.
Okay. And how do utility easements go for any of the downtown parcels that are pretty small? In some cases, you can't necessarily access utilities, maybe right directly from a property. Are there existing utility easements across all parcels so that if there was a parcel that could not get to utilities, there's a way to get utilities to every existing lot?
And typically there are, and that's really done on a case-by-case basis. Not having done that level of research in terms of where those utility easements might be on these particular properties, that's something we'd have to look further into.
Okay, thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open it up to the public, invite you to come up one at a time. It's helpful to state your name for the record, but you're not really required to tell us anything. So just feel free to walk right on up, grab the mic, make sure it's adjusted to about where your mouth is so we can hear you nice and clearly. And welcome. Everyone gets 3 minutes. Please come forward if you have any questions or comments on this. Welcome. Good. You can be the example to show how easy it is.
Okay, so I always mess this up, so I got that right. My name is Barbara Nunez. I own the Artery, which is at 5890 Traffic Way. I just want to say that I'm totally in agreement with this. I do have a question, though, and that's, I mean, we focus so much on West Mall, East Mall. This is 441 through Rosario. This is for the whole downtown area, correct?
Yes, we'll clarify the area in response to your question at the end, but yes. Basically.
Okay, because it just seems like the focus is really on dentist, doctor, but it's for the whole area.
Yes.
All right, that's it. So I just wanted to say that, yeah, I think that this is a great idea, and I think that we should definitely revisit it in a year and see where it's at and if we can make it a little bit more aggressive, because I think it's super lenient right now.
Thanks. Thank you. Well, let me go ahead and break my precedent, and I think let's go ahead and clarify the geographical area one more time. Is that represented up by that map pretty well?
Yes, I'm going to bring back one more map that shows this is the area that's proposed for the offices and healthcare services on the ground floor that would require a use permit. This boundary here, again, I'll just repeat that, it's El Camino Real, north of Atascadero Creek, south of the police station. It's Traffic Way, almost to Lewis Avenue there, Entrada, East Mall, West Mall, essentially surrounding Palma Avenue.
And why we had a little more discussion around East Mall, West Mall, and also over where the Armory area and Printery area is those areas had some unique additional rules, and we're kind of getting everything in this area more consistent. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's correct. And this map, this other exhibit I have up on the screen, shows those other two items, the ground floor residential for Armory and Printery property and the West Mall setback area.
Okay.
So all three of those proposals and all three of those boundaries for that location are on that map.
Good. Well, let's leave up one of the maps that kind of shows the whole area we're talking about. That's great. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Lori Ferguson. I'm with Spark Psychological Services at 5975 Entrada. I've owned the building for 5 years. I just had some questions regarding the vacancy clause. It sounds very vague, and as was already addressed, it can take longer than 6 months to find a buyer. And how is vacancy defined? Is that defined by an active business license that has been paid for? Is it defined by a certain number of customers or clients walking in the door? I think that needs to be clarified. Second issue I have a question for is, does renovation trigger a review process? Currently, I'm looking at doing renovation, adding solar and ADA bathroom. Would that trigger a review process, and how would that impact things? Third question is the storage facilities that are currently occupying retail space on Traffic Way and El Camino Real. I don't think that is fully addressed in the code as written, and I think that it's not a very attractive use of our retail space, so I would like to see some more clarification on the use of storage space that is non-retail in nature. And related issues would be, are there programs to help incentivize making existing and new buildings ADA accessible? I think that's very important for our community. And lastly, I greatly benefited when I opened my practice from the Chamber of Commerce SCORE program, which connected me with a retired vice president of Bank of America, and they walked me through financing, business plans, et cetera. I would love to see something like that from the city planning department. Basic advice like don't open up a baby consignment store right next to another baby consignment store, or retail density to yarn stores in downtown Atascadero. They probably will fail, which they both did. It would be a huge benefit to the community to have some advice on these things so that new businesses don't have to go through the heartbreak of failing. Just in front of my building, what I can see around me from the front of my building, I counted 30 businesses that have opened or closed in the space of the 5 years that I've been there. I stopped counting at 30. So that's a huge problem. Empty retail space is a huge problem for the vitality of downtown. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. And we do need to have folks close to the mic because I will shut down public comment pretty soon if we don't see folks lining up, and it helps things move quicker if we know there's someone ready to go. Welcome.
Hi, Jeff Oslin, Glenn's Repair and Rental, not in the downtown. However, as a community member and resident and business owner, the downtown and its vitality is a huge factor for this town. There's a couple things that I'm hoping we're taking into consideration, and some things were touched upon. One would be storage of the downtown. That's not retail, that's not office space, and having a good mix of all the above. The benefits of having some professional offices in the downtown, such as doctors, dentist offices, etc., is it does alleviate parking on the weekends and when there's special events in the downtown. And as we, as a city, are having more and more venues in the park and in the downtown, and we close roads, that does help because we're not taking away parking typically on a weekend from a business that people would drive up to. So just things to consider. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Hi, Susan Funk from Atascadero. I spoke in behalf of this at the Planning Commission also. I think that this is a direction that we need to go for our community, and it is a step forward in the sense that it prevents additional uses from coming into being that further complicate the challenges that we face in finding a creative solution to get the kind of community together that we want. I was traveling in Chicago this past summer. I spent a little time in the neighborhood that has become the Belmont Theater District, and we went to an improv that was an improv theater on top of a dentist's office. The improv was dreadful, but the location was excellent. And we have the opportunity over time to have some of these wonderful medical practices be famous because they're on top of the coolest restaurant in Atascadero with that great outdoor dining right along the sunken gardens, and everybody loves to come, and it's the life of the community. Or that dentist practice might be famous because there's a really fun improv club that's on top of the dentist's office. There is a future for our community to get there. This ordinance helps move us forward. I would suggest that the council consider the issue of complete, if the building is destroyed or damaged in a major disaster to such a extent, the 75%, that it has to get really rebuilt, that is an opportunity to come up with a solution that could be a win for the business owner and for the community, and not just for the business owner at the expense of the long-term vision of the community, and suggest that maybe that there might not be a need to create an exception for this class of businesses if they get destroyed, as Councilwoman Moreno was mentioning earlier, that it's a different treatment of this kind of business and it doesn't necessarily move us forward. I would encourage the council to look for, the challenge with the zoning ordinances is that it's all stick and no carrot. And we'll move towards what we want to create in the community if we can have both carrot and stick at the same time. So I encourage the council to think about positive and business-friendly approach that would help us take advantage of any disasters that, God forbid, occur. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Welcome, and it's okay to get a little closer to the current speaker.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brack Linscott. I've been in Atascadero for 36 years. I'm carrying on a legacy that Dr. Warren Johnson started in 1955 when he built the dental building where I am right now. It was built in a design to look like a comfortable, conforming residential place, easy on the eyes, easy on the comfort, and easy on any patient anxiety. So I have a really nice facility, and I know I want to thank you. I'm all blessed to be in this community. I welcome the addition of additional restaurants and all of that. That sounds wonderful. I think that the words that you've used is mixed use. I think that's a good use of the word mixed. And I've been there, and I welcomed everybody in the meantime since you've all arrived. And so I have a little part of me wants to bristle a little bit because I don't think I've been a nonconformist in my whole life. And now I could become, by some sort of proxy, a nonconformist. The goal is to make our community better, and I hopefully have added more smiles, people being able to chew and eat and be healthy. I think that's a nice mixed use. I think that, unfortunately, sometimes we dentists have been blocked together, and there's been a feeling, one of the newspapers reporter, I haven't yet met him, but he seemed to indicate that for the good of Atascadero, these dentists have got to go. And gosh, I thought we were a good, vibrant part of our community, and we'd done some good things. And you know, in terms of what the value of my practice is it's the patients and the business and location, location, location. And I'm honored to say our anxious patients can relax in the environment where our offices, our operatories face out into the park. And so, and on weekends, sometimes we allow people to come in, use our bathrooms so that, you know, the elderly that used to watch the parade for Colony Days could come in and relieve themselves. So I don't know, there's some other things that are sort of off the radar that people don't realize that we're part of the community. We're good guys. And so I just want to say thank you for letting me stay here.
Thank you. I am appreciative that back in the days when I used to see Dr. McCurdy downtown before a lot of dentists down there, with modern dentistry, you can actually go out and eat at those restaurants a lot quicker after being at the restaurant. So it's been some improvements. Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Dr. John Anderson. I own the property at 5903 East Mall, and I practiced orthodontics there for 28 years. And right now, Dr. Pambrin's in that building practicing orthodontics. So I don't really have a lot to say. I mainly showed up tonight just to see if there are any amendments or any changes in the code that was presented at the Planning Commission. So I do feel comfortable with what's being proposed, and I appreciate the fact that the city is addressing our concerns and what we're trying to hold on to our practices and our properties and serve the community in that way. I do feel that the downtown area is going to be market driven to bring about these changes. I think the zoning is going to help with that. But the bottom line is it's going to be market-driven. Investors are going to be needed to come in, buy up properties, and develop retail when they feel it's viable. And I think it's going that direction right now. So our offices can be purchased like any other properties, and I'm sure that when the time is right, we would be happy to sell our property and let it turn into retail. But so long, in the meantime, until the market drives in that direction, I appreciate you protecting us while we continue to run our businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Linda Baker, and I have a question, a clarification, just so that I understand a little bit more. It's related to the six-month condition that we were talking about. So my question is really for the medical professionals here. My understanding of this, which I'm not in a medical profession myself, is that before someone would sell a practice like that, they would find a buyer, bring somebody into their practice. So I'm wondering if the six-month thing would actually be a deterrent So maybe somebody can help answer that question. I understood that you said that that's just the Planning Commission, that's just standard practice, but I'm wondering if 6 months, how limiting is that?
Thank you. I'll see if I can address that question as well later. Welcome any other members of the public having a comment or question. And please come forward if you're planning on speaking, just to help us save time. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Matthew Coons. I also have a practice right here, an office right here on West Mall. I'm in favor of this proposal. I think it's really, I can tell that it's been really thought out, well thought out. And the reason for that is because for office space to not be able to move into the downtown, it doesn't hurt them. They can move right outside this area, and realistically, if they are a good business and, you know, do a good job, they're going to do well, whether they're downtown or not downtown. And I'm really pleased that it doesn't change anything for those of us who are already here. And the reason for that is, unlike somebody, you know, somebody coming downtown, those of us who are downtown already, it would be very, very difficult, and I mentioned this in the last meeting, it would be very expensive and very difficult to move. Somebody referenced an editorial in the Tribune, and it said, I'll paraphrasing, it said, with a little sacrifice on the part of some, and of course the article was about the doctors and dentists and optometrists and psychologists in the downtown, so with a little sacrifice, emphasis on little, as far as my perspective, you know, that we can change the downtown. And I read that, and I quickly did the math as far as the word little, and it would be completely devastating to my practice to have to move and build a new practice with all the plumbing and the electrical and all of the dental equipment. I quickly did the math and realized that it would be an absolute practice ender. It would be a business, you know, it would close my business, and I would not be able to move. And so whoever wrote that clearly doesn't understand what it costs to move a business, certainly a medical or a dental office. And people in the community, people have often, they talk about Paso Robles. They say, well, Paso Robles this and Paso Robles that. Okay, I grew up in Paso Robles, and I remember the time when it going around the park, it was the post office, it was the Daily Press, which was a huge building. There was office space, there was Napa Auto Parts, there was more office space on the other side. And so like Dr. Anderson mentioned, the free market is what changed Paso Robles to be what it is right now. And that's just how it was. All those businesses were incentivized in the correct way to move and to relocate somewhere else. Okay. So I'm in favor of the proposal, and thank you very much.
Thank you. And I don't want you doctors and dentists to feel too bad about how editorials treat you. You got to see how they treat us electives.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
It's kind of like the old days going to the dentist. Welcome.
Lori Ferguson again. Dr. Coons reminded me of one other point that I just wanted to share, which is that I do agree that the writer in the Tribune had some misconceptions about what it means to be a property owner or a business owner. And it's not just about the physical space. It's not just about the renovations made, but my funding source requires that I occupy 50% of my building. So if I were to move, I would have to sell. And that would create a major difficulty for me, obviously. And he also neglected the fact that when people purchase a building, it's dependent on multiple factors, including market timing. When I purchased my building, it had been on the market for a year, and the only other person, to my knowledge, that was shown the building was the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce. So arguably, we bring in more clients to that street than the Chamber of Commerce could. So again, I just wanted to reiterate that There are many factors that go into whether or not a business, whether it's retail or office, can easily move. Thank you.
Thank you. Last chance, anyone else want to tell us something or ask a question? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. I'm going to try to address some of those questions, and I'm going to do one thing a little bit different. There was a question asked really to the dentist, so I'd kind of like to see a show of hands, just if you happen to have a medical practice of any form in the downtown. Is the six-month condition a deterrent or not? Is anyone see that that's a problem for you, given the scenario of you might? So that would be one. Anyone else that's a... Is there another hand? Two hands up. Okay. Well, on that transition. So I'm going to go with the assumption that for most folks, it's not, because you're going to have a practice of finding someone who would take over the practice, as was suggested. But since we have, I'm going to pick on you, sir. If you would like to come up and just answer just that one thing. If you go off on another topic, I'll have to reopen all of public comment. We may never be able to leave. But if you would like to speak to that very question, is this a deterrent or not, that six-month restriction?
Thank you very much, Mayor. It would be a deterrent, and I can pick two examples. Number one, we have a dentist in San Luis Obispo who contracted the flu, this epidemic that's going around. He died. Sometimes you cannot sell a practice in the time that you want. The second dentist in Atascadero had an accident with a saw, a power saw, and lost a few fingers. He was disabled, could not practice dentistry again. These are just two people in our area. And sometimes things can sit a little longer than you wish, but it's important that there's some ability to become whole again. If you could sell, it's hard enough that you've been disabled, but to be forced to sell within a time frame is tough. I'd also like to point out that this wonderful building sat here as a kind of an elephant in the room for about 10 years before it got fixed and repaired and everything else. And we dentists, in the time that this building was really not looking very nice, have remodeled our offices. We painted, we made the downtown pretty, and we welcomed you back.
Glad to be back. Thank you. Well, I'm going to give you one last chance. If anyone really wants to say something, this is the time. I won't do this again. So please come forward, and we will just reopen, since I did have another person speak. But if you're thinking about you want to say something, you need to be in line.
This will be quick. I would not make it less than 6 months, because as Dr. Linscott mentioned, there's circumstances which could make it really difficult to even get a replacement within 6 months. So I would not go less than 6 months. Be my opinion.
Thank you. Anyone else? Welcome.
Hi, my name is Annie Wyrick. Touching on the six-month policy, I think that it is actually pretty generous. Most people would probably find someone lined up before they start the sale process and then would proceed with the sale as such. And when you talk about the editorials that are online, not just looking at the articles, but you look at the comments. Everyone knows what the community wants. They want to have a strong downtown. They might not be here tonight, but everyone knows what they want, and they want to have restaurants. They want to have retail. They want to be able to go out and do something. How many times have you heard people talk about a bowling alley? We know what the community wants, what the residents of Atascadero want, and they want to have a strong downtown. I think this policy or this plan is a great first step, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no one standing in line. I'll go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council. There were a few questions raised. I assume staff took good notes. Most were comments of a general nature. However, very specific questions. I think it would be good to make sure, if we don't have it somewhere already, where is vacancy defined? And then there was the issue of, would any renovations trigger any of the restrictions? And I believe the answer is no, but specifically solar and ADA were mentioned. The question about storage and other areas, well, that would be outside the scope of this tonight, but we might touch on how does storage within this area. I believe it is no longer allowed, but we might touch on that. And then I heard another question about incentives for ADA accessibility, and I may address that some myself, but are there any other questions that council members heard that we should have staff address at this time? Why don't we go ahead and have one more thought?
I think there was one that was all stick, no carrot.
All stick and no, yeah. What about incentives? And that might also be something that actually could be considered. I don't know that we would have the time to craft something on the spot, but certainly it's within the area of discussion tonight. So, Mr. Dunsmore, could you tackle those questions?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'll start with the vacancy definition, which I was hoping we had a definition in our code about vacancy. We really don't. I might look a little bit to our city attorney to see if he wants to take a stab at that. So all I can really do is give you my interpretation of vacancy, unless there's an actual legal definition of it. But my interpretation of it, just for what it's worth, is vacancy means the business has vacated that particular location and completely moved out. It doesn't mean they've limited their hours. It doesn't mean they're doing some improvements inside their building, so they're closed for a couple of weeks. It means they have moved out of that particular location, and that building is vacant. I think that's a pretty obvious situation when that occurs. So unless there's a legal definition for that, I'll leave that at that. Now, in terms of some of the other questions that we heard there, really good ones, actually, about...
Well, before you go on, yeah. Let me just see if the city attorney does have any comments about vacancy.
Well, in the 10 seconds since that subject was raised, I haven't had a chance to look it up, but I'm starting to do that. But what I would say is if there's not a specific statutory definition of vacancy, the rule is that you use the standard definition. And oftentimes in my career, I've gone to the dictionary and looked the word up and see what it says as a dictionary definition. And the courts do that as well if they can't find a statute. But you go keep talking. I'll see if I can find something. And if I do, I'll
Good.
Bring it
up. Good. You keep working away on that. And I do think also, I know, there might be a number of different definitions of vacancy. I know with the IRS, they don't expect that a business necessarily even has to make money for X period of time, which means you may not even have customers for X number of time. So I think given that there could be a pretty wide range, I would like to see us give some thought to that. Maybe not necessarily tonight, but it seems like that's a good question, and maybe we could work on that. But you know the city attorney, he may come up with something before you're done with the others. So let's move on to the next.
I also heard a question about doing improvements on your commercial location, tenant improvements, doing some plumbing upgrades, what have you. Those are things that do trigger a construction permit. I think that was kind of the question. What does that take to get something like that done? It is a construction permit. That doesn't have any bearing or significance on what we're discussing tonight. That's truly a separate matter. There was a question about a couple of the storage spaces we have downtown. I think I touched on that. Those are prohibited uses. Those aren't conditionally allowed uses. Those aren't allowed uses. We've got one that is on El Camino Real, just north of Traffic Way right now. That is not an allowed use. That is something that's been there for quite some time. There's also a shipping and receiving warehouse location on Traffic Way. That is not an allowed use in the downtown. That is non-conforming, doesn't have a use permit, can't get a use permit. So a couple of uses that I think, you know, over time, that hopefully they find a new location somewhere, because they don't have to be in a storefront. They could be anywhere. So that's a whole separate topic. I did hear also a location about, of course, I think you were going to mention it too, about accessible improvements. I do want to say that we have a great team in community development. We have stock plans ready to go. We will come out to your property and help you understand what the accessibility improvements need to be, how they can be installed, and we can give you information on the tax credits that are available and tax incentives that are available, which pay, I understand, almost for half of your accessible improvements if you're a business owner and your building was dated prior to the accessibility law coming into effect. So that's a really good thing to look into, and I can definitely assist folks with that. There was also some comments brought up about the SCORE program and whether we can do a similar program in community development, and we are doing very similar activities where we do give folks advice for business. All they need to do is come in to talk to us. And that's the hard part, is getting them to come in and talk to us, because we're really happy to help them with zoning information, incentive programs that can be out there, and, you know, our, you know, location, even finding services and finding a location for someone located in our downtown or elsewhere throughout the city. And I think that's really about it on the questions, I think, as far as I heard.
Good. Well, let me add to the ADA accessibility issue, because it's something I take personally. My appointee to the Planning Commission is Mark Derez, happens to be a young man that's an architect in a wheelchair, has been very active at Cal Poly and architecture, designing ADA accessibility, and we've really worked at that throughout our community. Staff done a great job of getting a number of grants to do more than really a lot of cities in this area. And it is very good to just check in with staff. There's a lot more help that they can provide you than people realize. Not only these stock plans that we've put together that help save a lot of cost and design, there is a lot of information. And a lot of folks don't realize, especially for businesses, if you talk to the county assessor's office, let's say you're going to do a sidewalk or you're going to do any number of improvements on your property, that, of course, could increase your property tax in the future. If it's ADA accessible improvements, you're exempt from property tax increases. So that's an incentive in itself. And then if you talk to your tax planner, there are actual tax credits. So as was said, I believe if you spend up to $10,000 per year, you can actually get a tax credit for $5,000, half of that or more. And so then there's some accelerated depreciation. So there's a number of benefits to being proactive on ADA that, again, I think if you check in with our staff, I can tell you we have our building inspector in our city is probably the best in the county on helping people work through tough solutions in that area. It is very accommodating. It often leads to me giving the answered, I have to tell folks often, sorry you live in California on some issues, and that's one of them, but our staff is very good at working with folks on that area. We have a couple more comments or questions from council. First, I'm going to go to Councilwoman Moreno, and then next, we are going to hear back from our city attorney.
Director, the wording that we're using in, we've been using the term vacancy, but that's not what it says here in the code. It says the prior office use has been discontinued for 6 months or more. So we're not saying vacant, we're saying discontinued. I mean, I wouldn't want it to be something where somebody kind of takes off for a period of time and stuff just sits around and they show up 9 months later and then maybe do something with it, but it wasn't vacant because there was still some office supplies in there or something like that. So it says discontinued use. And this is just in the staff report for 9-7.103.
Okay. I'm going to suggest I go to Councilmember Burbeau that has some questions. That might be a new wrinkle the city attorney might want to ponder a bit more. So let me go ahead to Councilmember Burbeau. You have an additional question.
I do, Mayor. Thank you. Mr. Dunsmore, in terms of some of these things that were brought up, they sparked questions in my mind. In terms of the storage uses, if they were vacated, so I mean they can continue to operate, but if they were vacated, how would they land in this scenario? They would, and would they have to, and is the answer different whether they were vacated for, you know, 1 month versus 7 months?
They fall into the same exact ordinance if they were legally permitted in the first place. So if they indeed have an active business license and they were legally allowed to be there from the first place, and they left, and then another storage use came in 5.5 months, and they were the same exact thing from that previous non-conforming use, they could come in. The same would be for the muffler shop. If the muffler shop said, hey, I'm going to close up shop and sell, and a new muffler guy came in 3 months or so, there you go. It's going to stay like that for the time being. But there is a question. This one, I'll just bring up this one storage use in particular that's on El Camino Real. We don't have a business license on record for that, and we'd have been unable to reach the property owner for that. It is associated with a permitted business, which is on Traffic Way, and they do have a business license. So in cases like that where someone does not have an active business license and they have a non-conforming use, that's essentially a prohibited use, and code enforcement could go in there and ask for that
to be discontinued or
discontinued altogether. So that really is the caveat with those situations.
Okay. So I would just comment on it. As a general rule, you know, those kind of usages like storage, et cetera, are, you know, far less compatible than, you know, dental offices.
And absolutely. And some of these
psychologist
are,
offices.
Certainly. They're leftovers from when our downtown had a lot of vacancies and lease and property values were very low for quite some time during the recession. And some of these things moved in and there they are. And
right.
Times have changed.
Okay. Another question regarding renovation. And this is perhaps in the extreme, but sometimes you have to use examples to try to understand where we're at or what things mean. So recently we had a, and it may have been what actually sparked this discussion a few years ago, we had a medical office and it's finishing up, but basically completely rebuilt. What if, you know, we get some of the other projects that we're excited about, as at least in potential terms, like La Plaza and the boutique hotel and shops next to the theater, and so property values start to go up in downtown. And somebody, one of the owners of these facilities says, well, I'd like to add on top of my medical office, you know, I'd like to add apartments or, you know, a restaurant on top of my my medical office, in kind of a reverse of what you're striving for, but perhaps desirable, perhaps not. What in the extreme, when we talk about what renovation means, definition-wise, and what its impact in these scenarios is, what would happen if somebody said, well, I want to add a second story to my medical practice or some other office business?
Well, so long as that medical office use or that other office use isn't expanding and what they're expanding or adding to it is a conforming use, that's fine.
Okay.
So now if they demolish the whole building and rebuilt that or expanded that office use, then it falls under this particular ordinance. But if somehow they were able to leave that existing location and add to it conforming uses, then you're okay.
Okay.
So residential upstairs is a conforming use. Office upstairs is a conforming use. Retail restaurant upstairs is a conforming use.
And also you mentioned word expansion and perhaps didn't register with me initially. So let's say my practice is going well or my office is going well. Maybe I'm an attorney or something in a ground floor building and I want to remodel the building to add more space so I can serve more clients or patients or whatever it happens to be.
That scenario would trigger the use permit.
Okay.
So they would come in and say to the Planning Commission, I'd like to expand my building. I have the parking and floor area to accommodate it. I've had an established business here for 35 years. Can I do that?
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Murray.
Thank you, Mr. City Attorney.
Yeah, I did a check in the time that I had to find a definition in the codes of vacancy. I didn't find one. So I looked it up in the dictionary, and there's, as you can imagine, many definitions. But the one that seems to apply specifically to this circumstance, because as you can imagine, that term has got a lot of definitions, is the definition being unoccupied. So being unoccupied would be the definition of vacancy. So if, even if the lights are on, if nobody's home, then it's unoccupied.
Very good. Now, do we get a discount for it just coming from the dictionary?
No, there's actually an extra charge because I knew that that's where I had to look.
Okay. That's how the city attorneys do it, Dennis. Okay. Very good. Well, we've kind of exhausted all questions. This is a time for council members to have further questions or deliberation or...
That still isn't answered, though.
Well, it's if you don't have to have every question answered to make a decision.
I'm only asking it for clarity purposes because the audience members keep talking vacancy, but that's not what this says. And yeah. So I don't necessarily have to have that specific question answered, but I think it should be very clear for the folks out here who are talking about vacancy.
So why don't you give that reference, restate that, and let's clear in our heads for Mr. Dunsmore.
Good point. So, Director, on page 31, where it says city's existing policy on nonconforming uses in accordance with the Atascadero Municipal Code, AMC 9-7.103, and it goes on to explain at the end, new office uses can be established where prior office use existed unless the prior office use has been discontinued for 6 months or more. So it doesn't say vacant. And now I don't have Title IX in front of me, but that's what the staff report says. So
then, and that word discontinued may or may not be in our code. That's an interpretation of the code. In the staff report, I don't have the whole code of 9-7 up there. We should look that up real quick, and I can get something up there because there's a couple other pieces to this nonconforming regulations in Chapter 9 of our zoning regulations, and it may define land use a little further and give us some more clarity on that particular word about discontinued and vacancy.
I do have the answer on that if you want to hear it.
Perfect.
Okay. It's Title IX, Planning and Zoning. It's Chapter 7, Nonconforming Uses. And the section actually is 9-7.106, and it's entitled Nonconforming Uses of Land. And it says that any nonconforming use of land may be continued as follows, and then under Section B, like boy, discontinued use, that if the nonconforming use of land is discontinued for a period of 6 months or more, any following use shall conform with all applicable requirements of the title. So, yes, our code does refer to the use being discontinued. My view on that would be that that's basically synonymous with vacancy. It's unoccupied. It's not being used. If it's a dental office, there's not patients coming to it. If it's some other kind of business, if they're selling ice cream and they haven't sold any ice cream, then it's
so there
not.
May be equipment or things kind of being stored there, but basically the doors have been closed for 6 months.
That's right. The use has been discontinued. It's not just that you happen to have a desk with a phone on it. I mean, it's got to be one that's in use, that people go in there and do whatever their business is, and with whatever, selling real estate or providing a medical service, whatever it might be.
Great.
And if
Thank
they
you.
Haven't done it for 6 months, then the use has been discontinued.
Regardless of whether there is equipment and stuff, if you will, occupying
correct.
The facility.
Correct, yes. Stuff wouldn't be enough.
That helps to... Right. Stuff would not be enough. Yeah. That's our tweetable answer tonight.
Stuff would not
Thank
be
Thank you.
Enough.
That clarifies.
That may be as good as we can do. I would think discontinued use is broader than vacant, but that's just me. I'm not an attorney. I don't have a dictionary with me. I'm thinking we might want to give this some more thought. I'm sure what happens in the real world is there'd be two attorneys debating what discontinued use means if it came to be a real financial issue. So it seems to be well defined within our code, but I think it would be helpful for council to get some feedback on that a little bit more in the future. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Mr. Dunsmore, before we go on to some other council questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Councilwoman Fonzie, did you have another thought?
Well, I don't want to argue with our city attorney because I know I'll lose. However, if one of our local dentists or doctors goes on a cruise for 6 months and one day and comes back and finds he's no longer in business, it might be a bit of a surprise.
I'm just going to let that one go. Any other council questions, discussion, or a motion? Let's see.
Make a motion.
Okay.
I think this is a good interpretation. It's a good interim measure. We may come back and revisit it again. I would agree with some of the comments about vacancies and changes of use being market driven. I think we've seen it in other cities when the value of the property goes up so high that it's more profitable to sell that property and move someplace, people will do it. And so with that, I'd like to move staff's recommendation with the improvements and corrections that we've received this evening.
And I will second that, and I echo those comments that this is a good first step. I know that the idea of revisiting yearly or, you know, on a regular basis to see, you know, does this still work? Are there some changes that need to be made? Because certainly the free market drives this. Zoning has to be in place, though, to set the parameters around which we want our downtown to thrive. And so I think this is a good first step. And I really appreciate staff and our commissioners that have gone to the extent that they have to put this together, because I know it's not easy. And I appreciate all of you. A lot of faces I know, I come to your businesses, and I appreciate that you are wanting some change. And then I appreciate those of you that have been there for 36 plus years and what you bring to the community. So I think this is a good balance, and I second that motion.
So we have a motion on the floor, motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
It's an ordinance introduction, so let me read the title really quick.
Thank you.
An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, amending the Atascadero Municipal Code Title IX Zoning Ordinance, Section 9-3.330, requiring a conditional use permit for office uses on the ground floor, and prohibiting ground floor residential uses within the downtown zoning district. Section 9-3.347, removing a 20-foot setback requirement from West Mall. And Section 9-7.110, allowing an office use to be reestablished following involuntary destruction. Councilmember Moreno?
And that does include the changes, correct?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. And as someone who's at times stayed here as late as 2 in the morning leading discussions on Walmart, thank you for all being very polite and helpful and well thought out discussion. And we appreciate your effort. We can move on to the next item on the agenda.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
I do have a question for the city clerk. We had the discussion regarding this removing residents as allowed use on the properties north of Olmeda, specifically the armory and printery properties. I don't see that specifically mentioned in the wording you just read, but it was, so maybe I just missed where it's included in what.
What I read was the title, so it should be included in what will actually go for. That was just the title of the ordinance.
Got it. Okay.
And it'll go as part of the actual ordinance itself.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And, of course, there will be a second reading, which is another opportunity for public input at a future meeting. And if any modifications are made at that time by the council, we would have to re-notice it and have more discussion. But we expect this back. When we expect this back at our next council meeting that is held? The second reading will be at the next council meeting?
Very next meeting, absolutely, yes.
Thank you. So we have no management reports. We will move to the next item on the agenda, which is council announcements and reports.
And why don't we go ahead and merge them again with any comments council members would like to have, as well as committee reports. And let's go ahead with Councilmember Burbeau.
Nothing other than tomorrow we have a design review committee meeting that Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie and I will be attending. It just has one item regarding a proposed lot split on Portola. And
I'm
at
gonna,
some point, Mr. Mayor, I'm
excuse
sorry.
Me, let me, I'm going to suggest we just take a 5-minute break because the folks are kind of in the process of working their way out, and we'll come back briefly. Well, let's see. There's going to be some, let's take a 3-minute break.
little bit of review. So please welcome back. I think it got discombobulated.
It looks kind of sad.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be fine. Is Councilmember Barbeau in the building? I think we're going to have to bypass Councilmember Barbeau and move on. We'll start down at this end and we'll work our way over. Go ahead, Councilmember Sertovic.
No report.
Air Pollution Control District did meet, and they've been having hearings with the Coastal Commission, and there's been a decision to cut back on the number of acres that are in riding area for the Oceano Dunes dust area. We'll be hearing more about this later. There is a new director that is on board now, and things seem to be taking a slightly different direction than we've seen in the past, and I will report back as this goes forward. LAFCO meets tomorrow. We'll be discussing the property tax split that has historically been in place for the county and includes the city of Atascadero, which did not agree to be involved in the contract for property tax splitting. So this should be an interesting discussion, and I will report back to you on that one. The Atascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency is putting together their agenda. I happen to chair that, and I've requested, unless there is some information to contrary from the council at a later date, that we discuss a ballot measure that is proposed to prohibit the exporting of water, groundwater, outside of the groundwater basin boundary. So you may have seen this or may have signed it, but it'll be coming before the Atascadero Basin Water Sustainability Agency soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the discussion of the tax sharing is almost a good segue to the animal shelter issue, and I'm going to touch on a little bit and hand it off back to you. As you know, Councilman Fonzie and I are both on our ad hoc committee talking with the county. Now, one of the issues is, of course, the county's been looking at replacing their animal shelter for some time, has not had a lot of involvement with the cities. Certainly been meetings, but not a lot of give and take. As you know, there was in times past when the county received a pretty disproportionate share of the property tax, they provided a lot of services, one of which was the animal shelter and a number of other services. Over time, those services have kind of been shifted to cities, but without any change or sharing of the property tax. That's a discussion that comes up at the countywide mayor's meeting a number of times, and I'm glad that Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie is kind of taking that up at LAFCO. Along that lines, of course, when it came down to where it's just a huge cost, and we're talking, you know, going from a 50,000 year to 250,000 year type of cost increases just for our city, a number of cities were looking at this, and we, Mayor Martin and I, basically went to the Board of Supervisors requesting, could we have a month longer to take a look at this? We just think we could maybe come up with an alternative. The county declined. They would not give us any more time to look. So both city councils said, well, we're going to opt out, which was an option. And I must say, within a month's time, we came up with a private sector option that would be a lower cost for the cities. And of course, then I also approached the county Board of Supervisor members suggesting, you know, we're still interested in talking. We think they should consider a few options that could help lower the costs for all cities and the county. One of our biggest concerns was looking at how you plan to reduce need over time, and that was something that the county had not considered. And we did find that with the private sector options, there were some ways to actually contract for a five-year period and actually hold costs constant, whereas there was an escalation built into the county. So we were concerned about that, but the county did reapproach and say, well, they would like a month, which we said would be great. Let's see what they can come up with. Well, it's been 3 months, and we've had two meetings with the county during that time, and there's really been no movement at the county level looking at other alternatives. I think they're still trying. But given that, The two cities are really left in a position. We have a lower cost alternative for the cities. We'd love to work on a regional basis. We believe we could actually reduce costs for all cities and the county, but it really is up to the county to bring a proposal to us. What they suggested is, well, they could probably guarantee that they would not shift $1 million of contingency onto us. That's not really a reduction in the budget. That's just if there's cost overruns, they would absorb the first $1 million of even a higher price. It was kind of fun for me to go to County Board of Supervisors meetings and have people talk about, well, what does the Tascadero know about animals? I said, you know, we do have a we have a zoo that's accredited nationwide. We actually take care of endangered species at a lower cost than the county's proposing to take care of dogs and cats. Now, we do have cats. We got a tiger. So I think we know. And, of course, Paso Robles has a little experience with animals. The Paso Fairgrounds, if you've noticed. So I think we really feel like, well, we can do this if we need to. There's actually a number of cities looking to us of maybe potentially partnering with our two cities, because it's without our two cities participating, the county's costs will go up about 45% on top of a very high cost for the other cities. So I think there is something. I think I can speak for Councilwoman Fonzie. We're both disappointed to see to say the least, not a lot of efforts so far in the county, but we do hope they continue to look. They've had some challenges, and we'll wait to hear. But meanwhile, as our last action of the two cities is, we're going ahead with a private sector alternative, and unless the county comes up with a lower cost alternative to present. So that's that on the animal shelter. Do you want to add anything on that?
I think you've said it very well. It's been frustrating. I think they're trying to work with us and understand our position, but when it comes to actually to the operating cost for the animals every year, it will not change. There is no incentive for them to reduce their cost, to incentivize spay and neuter programs or anything else. It's always going to be going up, which we've seen for the last 10 years is getting out of hand. So I think we're going to be on our own with Paso.
Yes.
That's the way it's going.
Well, and I'd have to say it's interesting. I participate on a number of regional boards, which are usually the five county supervisors and the seven cities, often the mayor. And I'd say the cities work very well together. And we've got about as diverse of a membership on all the countywide mayors as the board has on their board, and yet we do work very well together. We did have Mayor Harmon from San Luis, and I met with Mayor Martin up in Paso recently, and we're going to be working with the Mid-State Fair on a promotion activity. We're going to have Terry Banish work on this, but much like up at the state capitol where you can have a display for each county at the state capitol, the fairgrounds is going to have a display for each city, and we're kind of, if you imagine going down a sidewalk that's kind of labeled Highway 101, and there's each city in right where you would expect to see it, talking about what's best in each city. And I think, again, it's another area where the cities are working well together on a regional basis. I was also pleased to be invited by the county to participate in the interview process for the new health agency director. As you know, the animal shelter is one issue. We've also had some significant issues with mental health services in our county. We've talked about all the police chiefs. In fact, this is the first time I think all the mayors agreed on something to say before the County Board of Supervisors when they were considering some of the mental health issues, because every one of our police departments ends up carrying around mental health clients that simply have no place to go. Sometimes they end up at the jail. They're supposed to end up at mental health. And to me, I'd say on the record that I don't see it as a problem at the Sheriff's Department or with the DA. I see it as another problem at the health agency that needs to be dealt with at that level. Since the problems with the animal shelter and since the problems with the mental health services, they are looking for a new health agency director, and I was pleased to be asked to help on that interview process. We'll talk about that more in the future. There's so many things I would say. If you want to touch on the little site visit we had with our disposal landfill, I'll let Councilmember Burbeau do that. The one thing that's very interesting is with San Luis Council of Governments being president again this year, I've also participated on a regional coalition of five counties that's really put us in a very good negotiating position with other areas in the state. And we did meet with the California Transportation Commission lady, one of the nicest, brightest, and I bet she's tough behind the scenes ladies up in Sacramento that heads this up. And she had a lot of good things to say about our region. Remember, this is a five-county region. Normally, when our county applies for grants at the state level, going against LA County, do I need to even tell you how that goes? But when you have a five-county region together, and we actually, much like our cities, have worked very well together. We've prioritized projects across all five counties. We've even broken down our individual projects into components so that you could fund a portion of a project. And according to this lady, no one else has done that. And that's part of why I think we've been a little more successful on getting some very limited funds. I just want to bring one thing to your attention. We're not going to talk about SB1, but I do want to make sure folks understand Prop 69 that's going to be on the ballot this summer. And that simply is something I think everyone would agree that if we, the people, say put this money towards transportation, it ought to stay with transportation, whether it's SB1 or whether it's any other funding that's been borrowed, redirected, or something over time. And so you'll see folks really rallying behind this Prop 69 that'll be on the ballot this summer, and you should decide for yourselves what you think about that. I think that is enough talking tonight for me. I'll pass it on to Councilwoman Moreno.
I have a question about that Prop 69. I knew that was coming up. I didn't know that applied to more than SB1. So that applies
yes.
to like truck weight fees and anything else from here forward.
I'm going to let you read this.
Okay. I won't bore you all by
right
reading that
now,
here, but,
it does cover some broader areas.
Excellent.
So it gives more protection.
I'll take a look at that. I'm glad to hear it. Economic Vitality Corporation, what we have been focusing on is there was a committee put together to go out and hire a consultant to do the work, you know, considering Diablo's closing and look at what are the economic impacts going to be to our area, and then what is an implementation plan that we can have to put together countywide to move us forward into a post-Diablo economy. And a lot of that money we were, you know, all of us, the countywide, were anticipating would come from the agreement that the PUC ended up denying. And so now we're looking at really both public and private needing to come together to help fund this. It's incredibly important, and I know that more of that will be coming to us, more details on that, but some decisions that we're all going to need to make in that regard. Regarding co-working, which I've been talking about for several months now, we started meeting last fall to look at the need for a co-working space in Atascadero, which we found through our survey that is very high, and we now have something that's going to be moving forward. It is still in the process of being solidified, so very excited about it, and I'll bring more information, but we have our next meeting of our subcommittee this Thursday. I'll keep you posted. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Burbeau, any more addition from earlier?
No. Well, you just mentioned that you as our city's rep to the Integrated Waste Management Authority and me as the alternate, we did go out and tour the Chicago Great Landfill and specifically to meet with the new owners as that changed ownership a while back. And so we had a good meeting, talked about the facility and some things they're interested in, and they'll be getting in touch with the city manager to have some discussions.
Very good. Ms. City Manager, have we missed anything that you'd like to add to? Very good.
I wouldn't mention, I don't know, you didn't really mention strategic planning.
That would be good.
Strategic
why don't you lead that off, add your comments.
I don't have anything specific to say about it. the City Council did conduct a strategic planning session this last weekend on Friday evening and most of Saturday, and just discussed a wide variety of things with the staff present. Had 5 to 10 members of the public speak at various points in that and provide some input to the council. But we had a good discussion about some issues affecting everything from zoning and just some other things that we have to look forward to dealing with in the future. And we tried to discuss priorities, what sort of things we would like to see brought to the council by staff over the course of the next year.
Yeah, I did discuss a little bit on KPRL today. It is the midpoint of our two-year strategic planning. We had some goals reviewed from the last year. And remember, our principal goals is always economic development, number one. We talked specifically about revitalizing the downtown, and we also wanted to make sure we are managing our employee resources. I always like to talk about opportunity costs. You know, if you say you want to do something up here, that means you're not going to do something else. One thing I thought that was really new that we talked about a little more depth than we have before is there's a real need, I think, a safety issue with our existing fire department. Very old Station 1. I remember because my dad was one of the first firemen here in our community working there. They actually have the fire trucks right in like a giant garage, and there's living quarters right next door. They've been able to add some venting and various things, but there's a lot of issues with the new hazardous materials that firefighters encounter now. There's a lot of issues that we really need to take a look at that. So it's one issue that the building needs to be redone just because of age, but there's really some employee safety issues to consider. So the council took that very serious and is looking for some maybe phased approaches. It's very important to plan fire stations and police because it really affects all of our community's insurance rates. Response time is very important, so the council does very much tune into these issues, and I thought Chief Bryson did a very good job of bringing some things to our attention that I don't think we were really quite as up to speed on, and then to come up with some really cost-effective interim steps that we can do to make things better. So I really appreciate, Chief, your input on that. Chief Haley also has some ideas about that we can kind of have some win-win combination of resources and services, looking at the EO, the Emergency Operations Center, combining some things. I think something people were very interested out of the area was looking at possibly combining our efforts on a training facility. Instead of each department, like fire and Atascadero, Paso, and Templeton, doing things on their own, most of what we need to do for a real emergency, a big one, is working together in mutual aid. So I think Chief is exploring possibly might be a better cost alternative for both cities. I know Paso's interested in this as well, so good things the Chiefs are working on in that area. Well, we actually talked about a lot of things, but those were a couple of new things, so thank you for bringing that up too. Anything else we need to touch on? Again, good job, finance team, and happy Valentine's Day tomorrow. And with that, we are adjourned. Public comment was at the beginning of the meeting. Sorry.